Well, welcome back to Embracing Your Mortality podcast with me, author Sue Brain. On the first day of the month, I posted an interview with someone who is inspiring us to live more consciously for a better world. And my goodness me, we need all the help we can get these days. And this is why I'm so delighted that my guest today is bee expert Paula Cannell, who is an international speaker on bees. She's the head beekeeper at the wonderful Newt in Somerset, an author of A's to Bees and Bees in Bhutan. Such is her passion for bees that she runs bee safaris to educate people about the importance of these amazing, life-giving and life-enhancing buzzy creatures. She's also the winner of Environmental Consultant of the Year 2023. Paula, congratulations on your award. You must be thrilled. Now, I know your passion is about creating a buzz about health. So how did all this come about?
Oh, gosh. Well, thank you, Sue. I'm really honoured to be your guest. Like we all find, as we get into our middle ages, you realise that all these little seeds have been sown throughout your life, and then it all comes together like a big tapestry. And there's lots of different routes that have taken me to where I am. So yes, I am a bee consultant. I was absolutely over the moon to win Environmental Consultant of the Year. I had no idea that was coming. So that was really nice. I came into bees whilst I was bed and wheelchair bound with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. So the first 20 years of my...
Can you explain what Ehlers-Danlos syndrome is?
So Ehlers-Danlos syndrome is a genetic condition, and it affects the connective tissue of your whole body. So you are born with it. But what had happened with me was I was born with it. I had all the classic hints that I had it, but it's very rarely diagnosed. So it is more common now, and more people are being diagnosed with it, but it's often misdiagnosed because it affects your whole body. And the Western medicine system is separating our bodies. So if you have something that's affecting your head and your toes, they don't know where to send you. You know, a toe expert can't get to the bottom of it, and neither can a head expert. So I did spend 6 years bedbound before I was finally diagnosed. And to get the diagnosis, there was a lot of research that I had done on the symptoms and, you know, on various conditions. And I'd actually found that there was a Dr. Byron Hyde, a Canadian doctor, who'd been commissioned by the British government to do a review on the high proportion of people with diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome and or ME in the UK. And his research came up with the results that he believed 60% of the people diagnosed with ME or chronic fatigue syndrome actually have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And he listed the symptoms of Ehlers-Danlos. And when I read this paper, I could tick every box. It was like, oh my gosh, this is what I've got. But then it took another 2 years before I could get to see the geneticist, because once you've been diagnosed with a condition, it's very difficult to undo that diagnosis and get something else, because there's rules. There's rules on what tests you can have and what treatments you can have. And chronic fatigue syndrome and ME are classified as somatic conditions. So it means that they are psychological, and therefore there's no physical treatments for them. So the only treatment they will allow you to have with chronic fatigue syndrome is graded exercise therapy. So the idea is that you're weak and you've got no energy, so you gradually do a little bit more exercise every day. And the other thing was CBT, cognitive behavior therapy. Now, I knew intuitively that something was really wrong with my body, and I was part of the 25% of people in the UK who are bedbound with what they thought was chronic fatigue syndrome. And so when you're bedbound and that ill, you can't do any exercise. And the cognitive behavior therapy treatments are only offered in groups in Somerset, which meant driving half an hour to sit in a chair, which I was unable to do, for an hour in a group session. So I was actually blacklisted as somebody who had refused treatment because I was unable to attend CBT offering. Yeah. So I only came to find all this because I was claiming my critical illness insurance. So when I was an artist for 20 years, so from 20 to 40, And intuitively, I had private health insurance and a critical illness life insurance because I didn't trust that if I ever couldn't work as an artist, I didn't trust that I would get any kind of insurance or payment. And so I wanted to set something up on my own so that I would be covered. And it was really interesting that when I did need it, I had to fight for 2.5 years to get the payment. And this is how I got into the politics of illness, because if chronic fatigue syndrome was classified as a physical illness, and this is why they call it chronic fatigue and not ME, because ME is actually myalgic encephalomyelitis, which is a physical condition of swelling in the brain. And then you have to have an MRI and there's all sorts of treatments. But if it's a physical condition, you qualify for critical illness insurance payout or life insurance. And if it's somatic, you don't. So I was sure that my body was physically disabled. You know, I was physically disabled. I was completely bedbound. It turned out once I had the EDS or the Ehlers-Danlos syndrome diagnosis, I was also diagnosed with postural orthostatic tachycardia, which is where your heart can't pass the blood round when you're upright, which is why I had to lay flat all the time. Mm. And if I was sat up like I am now,
yeah,
I'd be dizzy, I'd be sick. And I had literally 2 hours a day where I could be in a wheelchair or I could potter with sticks. I had to be laying flat. And of course, that doesn't make you look ill, but no. You know, you need to be flat. And people just don't understand.
Let's just roll on to the bees. How did the bee enter your life and enable you to heal? Because you're one of the most healthiest people I've ever met.
Well, 2 years into being bedbound and before we knew what was wrong, it was my birthday. November is my birthday month. And so I always used to have parties and I used to love having people around, but I couldn't do any of that. And my husband kept saying, what do you want for your birthday? And to help with the mental stress of being disabled and losing my business and not being able to look after my kids, you know, I had to have carers every day. So I would be spending the majority of my time meditating. You know, that was all I could do, was physically lay in bed and escape in my head. And I was thinking, what can I do rather than what I can't do? So there was a lot of grief around me from everyone I knew about me not painting, about, you know, with the children, you know, with my husband. There was so much grief about my condition. And so I was always trying to think, well, what's the positive? What's the positive? What can I do? I couldn't read a book. I couldn't watch television because I'd be nauseous. You know, it was when you think, oh, 7 years in bed, think of all the books you could read. But I couldn't even do that. So it was like, well, what can I do? And I kept thinking of all the things I always wanted to do when I was busy as an artist, and keeping bees was one of those. So I just said, I really want to keep bees. So I'd like a beehive. And my husband was like, that's crazy. You can't get out of bed. You can't look after the bees. We haven't got bees. Why should you have a beehive? And I just said, I just know I need a beehive. I just want a beehive so I can lay in bed and watch the bees. So in the end, he gave in, bless him. He bought a flat pack beehive and he was in the garage every night putting it all together. And on my birthday, I was given this beehive. So we put it out in the garden. And then there was this amazing synergistic, you know, occurrences where a chap walking his dog in the field behind our house had seen the beehive. I happened to get my mum to look up how do you get bees. And so we found the local beekeeping association and there was a number there for a swarm collector. And the swarm collector happened to be the man walking his dog in the field behind our house. So he had spotted the hive. So he put some of his bees in my hive and every week he came up and looked after them. And when I was able, I'd be wheeled out, pushed up, you know, propped up, and he'd teach me beekeeping. And it was just amazing because it gave me a different focus. Mm-hmm. And anyone who's been chronically ill, you get used to that situation of where you're pretending to be well because you really want to have an experience. You want to not be ill all the time. So it was a great escape because when I'm with the bees, you have to be present with the bees. So you'd forget about being ill. And then I'd pay for it. You know, I'd have to sleep longer and lay flat longer afterwards. But I just found it fascinating. But the big shocker for me was after the first season and we harvested the honey, Chris came back with a big package and I said, oh, what are you going to do today? And he said, well, I've got this for the bees. So I'm like, well, what have you got for the bees? And it was a big package of sugar fondant. And he said, we have to feed the bees because we've taken all their honey. And that's when it dawned on me that the bees eat honey. And it's just crazy. We get so used to the fact that the bees make honey, but we never question why they make it or what happens if we take it all off them. And I knew from that stage, so I was, you know, 3 years into being ill, and I already knew that if I ate sugar, I had more inflammation, more pain, more nausea. So I'd stopped eating sugar. And as a mother of sons, I also knew it wasn't great for them to be eating a lot of sugar. You know, I knew if you pick them up from school and they had a sugar treat, you know, they'd be running up and down and wanting to fight. You know, it was all too much. So I could not understand why we would give sugar to wild animals, which are what bees are. And that's when I started to question beekeeping. And that's when all these sort of little nuggets from earlier on in my life all started to come together. And I was definitely the first person in my group of beekeepers in this region who started saying, we can't be giving bees sugar. And everyone thought I was crazy, you know, and they said I was crazy. You're just a crazy middle-aged woman who knows nothing about bees because you've just come into it. Don't tell us what we know. So that put me on a quest to look deeper and look into the science of nutrition and sugar and honey. And that started my journey of realizing there was a big connection between bee health and human health.
Good. What it feels like that the universe just had you in its sights and you had to do all of that to get to where you are now. It's just extraordinary because you go around the world now, don't you, talking about bee and health. So do you want to say a little bit more about what you've learned about bee health?
Okay. So I suppose if I also share what I learned a bit about my health. So I managed to fully recover from Ehlers-Danlos syndrome using herbal medicine. So I was a patient of a medical herbalist and also plant-based minerals. And most people have no idea about the difference of minerals. And minerals are the rocks that we have in the soil, but plants process those rocks. And if we eat those plants, we have an easily absorbable form of those minerals. And when I started taking these really good, pure plant-based minerals, my health, it was like somebody flipped a switch. So the herbal medicine got me out of the wheelchair, but taking the minerals enabled me, within 3 months of taking minerals, I was able to walk the Dorset Coast Path. So I knew I was better. And
literally 3 months.
Yeah, 3 months from taking them.
And just give me an example of one of the minerals that you took.
Well, they're all... Okay, so they're all in together. It's about 65 different minerals. And what it is from a glacier melt. So all around the world, we had forests and jungles before the ice age. Then the ice age froze all those plants. And then as the ice melted, you get layers of soil, which are basically made up of the plants, which are minerals, all compressed down. So if you find these areas with this really mineral rich soil and you clean it, you know, so you're not just eating mud, you then get all these different minerals that are millions and millions of years old. Now, the problem we have as humans is the way we grow our food is in these monocultures, and we're not allowing the soil to regenerate. And so we're depleted of minerals in our soils and in our food. And that's when I thought, oh my gosh, if the planet is averaging about 75% depleted of minerals, it means that the bees aren't getting minerals in the nectar of flowers because the minerals are nowhere. And what we do is we just put, you know, three minerals on our soil. So the artificial fertilizer is, you know, nitrogen, you know, NPK, and that's it. And we're not thinking about all the different minerals that we need. And the human body needs 65 minerals every day. And they're the spark plugs of life. So Dr. Linus Pauling got a Nobel Prize on his research on minerals. And he believed that every disease known to man was due to a mineral deficiency. So that was that, wow, what a big connection between humans and bees, because we're living on the same planet. So I started giving my bees the same minerals I was taking because they're just pure mineral powder. And the bees were eating it. And then I noticed my bees were really healthy, but I knew they'd be healthy. And they became, you know, I didn't want to use chemical treatments for disease prevention in my bees. So by making sure they're eating their own honey and that they are having minerals, I knew that they were healthy. So my bees were becoming stronger and healthier. And I knew it was because of nutrition and the environment that I'm living in. So if you allow weeds to grow, so each plant has a different process, it has a purpose for different minerals. So if you observe which plants appear in your environment, you then have an indication of what minerals are going to be in your soil. And this is why the ancient system of farming was having set aside and, you know, having areas of wilderness and actually rotating crops so that you remineralize the soil. But the last 100 or so years, we've stopped doing that. We're just thinking, yeah, I'm a cereal farm and that's all I grow forever. And yeah, if I just keep putting things on top, I'll be able to continue growing cereal. But we're not looking, we're not measuring the mineral content. And because it's not in a metallic mineral, it's a trace element, it's a minuscule amount, it's not being measured or even quantified. So there's so little research, well, there's research, but there's so little awareness of the importance of minerals in our diet.
That is an awesome, I mean, it just makes, you know, I'm just thinking about my garden and all the nettles. You know, I have a very small urban garden and I do keep in an area of my garden, I grow nettles and, you know, anything wild. And I've always felt that it's really important to do that, to have just a little bit of, it just does its own thing. And I don't garden it. I just talk to it, go, hello. But it's that kind of feel. And it is about just allowing nature is in a part of your garden to do what it needs to do.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And because the herbal medicine really helped me to start with, I started studying to be a medical herbalist. So I'm 7.5 years into my training. Wow. And the first thing we were taught was look in your environment and see which plants come in, which plants suddenly appear in your garden. And I'm lucky, I've got quite a big garden here and I'm not a great gardener. You know, and where I used to paint, I'd paint exotic flowers. So I would grow, you know, two of this or three of that. And I've got a lot of roses. So when I was ill, it sort of went a bit more to ruin. And actually we re-landscaped, we did an extension and things whilst I was ill. And then when I started my herbal medicine studies, I started to look at plants that I didn't recognize. You know, they just appeared. And one of the really astonishing things was there's these little clumps of leaves. And I thought they were primroses. So I started looking and I was watching them. So the first year, it looked like a little clump of leaves. The second year, boy, they shot up and they were teasels. And so I had teasels in my garden. It was like, well, where have they come from? Because there wasn't teasels in the field behind. I certainly hadn't planted them. So these teasels appeared. And in our herbal medicine, we were taught, well, look at the plants that are growing in your environment and then understand them, start researching them and reading up about that plant. And the most astonishing thing is the teasel root is used as a treatment for connective tissue disorders.
Oh, the synchronicity of the magic of life when you open to it.
Yeah.
Marvelous.
Yeah. Oh,
I love that. Now, I heard you give a talk and I was gripped by what you said about how we are unable to really process the vitamin tablets that we're taking. And it's a multi-million pound dollar industry. Could you explain a little bit more about what you found out about that? And you talked about the festivals.
Yeah, so I'm from Dorset. You know, I now live in Somerset, but about 20 miles away from where I was. And growing up as a teenager, you're all sort of looking for part-time jobs. And because of the big festivals around here, like Glastonbury, a few of my friends got jobs working for mobile toilet companies. So in the 1980s, this, you know, it was a good job, not one I was at all interested in doing. But I remember both of my friends who had these jobs for separate companies, they had in passing mentioned that the biggest problem their bosses had was knowing what to do with the literally mountains of undigested vitamin and mineral pills that people took. And I said to them, how do you know they're vitamin and mineral pills? And they said, because they still have the brand names written on them. And I was just so shocked. So this is, you know, when I'm like 15 to 18 years of age. And it was just one of those things that just sat in my head. And I thought, that's really crazy. So throughout my life, I just would not take vitamin and mineral pills because I knew we couldn't digest them. Well, when I started to find out about minerals, you know, my mum found these plant-based minerals. And I'm like, well, I know they're rubbish. We can't absorb them. And then she said, oh, no, these are different because they're plant-based. And read this, you know, so there was information about the difference. And then I realized that the minerals you're buying in drugstores, they're basically the metallic version, the rock form of the mineral ground up into a powder. And the molecular structure of that is too big for our bodies to digest. And this is why when you get prescribed certain minerals, you know, like if people were given iron tablets, you're then told, oh, you're going to get constipation. And it's because it literally, your body can't process it, you know, and minerals are meant to ease the whole process of all your functions. And so the last thing you want is constipation, because then you're literally poisoning yourself from the inside. It's a waste product because it doesn't need to be in your body. And if you're not getting rid of waste products, they're festering away and making you sick. And so having these tablets that you can't digest and they're going right through your body, but they're not everybody's body. They don't go right through. I mean, one of the problems I have with Ehlers-Danlos is my digestive system. I would hold on to toxins. I would hold on to heavy metals. So I was poisoning myself from the inside out. So yeah, that was, it was just one of those things that I learned early on and I thought, right, I'm never going to take those. And I just never took them until my mum introduced me to the plant-based ones.
And just to finish off that little bit of information about all these vitamin pills, where did they end up?
Well, there's actually quite a big business in destroying and removing or collecting all these pills. But they end up going back into our water system, into the soil, landfill, burning. You know, it is just crazy. But also they do a lot of synthetic things. So they'll find a mineral. It's this sort of reductionist thing. So if you think about calcium, and women of my age and your age, we're probably recommended to take calcium. Now, that's because some scientists somewhere found that we had calcium in our bones, but we actually have hundreds of different materials in our bones and lots of different minerals. Now, to process calcium, you have to have magnesium. So if you take a calcium tablet and it doesn't go right through your system, it's just sitting there rotting away, or being broken down slowly by your body needs magnesium to process that calcium. And if you don't have enough magnesium, which most people don't, it takes it from where you've got it stored in your body. And where do you store it? In your bones. So it's actually taking the magnesium from your bones, which makes your bones weaker. So we have this situation where people are taking calcium, they're not taking magnesium, they're not able to absorb the calcium, they're not able to absorb enough magnesium. Your body's always trying to maintain homeostasis. It's trying to be balanced. And so you weaken your bones because that's not essential. And then you break your bones. And then we're like, oh, thank goodness I was taking calcium tablets because it could have been a worse break or whatever.
And not understanding that we need the implications of even doing, of taking calcium. I mean, it's scary stuff, this is.
It is scary stuff. And there's lots and lots of research about it. There's lots of doctors who are specialized in this and you can find them. But unfortunately, particularly over the last few years, a lot of them get censored. You know, it is worrying. And I mean, something I do want to share that I find both disturbing and very interesting is when I got my diagnosis, I was under a geneticist. There was rheumatologists. I had doctors, and socially, I know quite a lot of doctors as well because my kids went to school and their friends, their parents were doctors. And not one of them, not one single one has asked me how I recovered since I recovered. Wow. And so I see people socially, they know me. And, you know, the geneticist, he was pretty damning. You know, he said, I'm really sorry. There's nothing we can do. You're an extreme case. We can make your life more comfortable with physio or with orthotics for your feet. But and I haven't been back since. And nobody's thought to ask why. And that I find crazy.
I suppose because you defy modern science, isn't it? And the fact you've gone back to actually just enabling yourself to connect deeply with the natural rhythms, the natural substances of nature, as we are of nature, and you've gone back to allowing yourself to deeply connect with that. And that's healing.
It is healing. I can understand from one perspective, and this is why my TEDx talk was censored.
Yes,
so they took out where I said that I was a patient of a medical herbalist, and they took out where I said about the minerals have their names on them, even though these are all facts and backed up by my personal experience and by science. But the thing is, we have been taught to hand over responsibility for our health. You know, they burnt the wise women, the witches of the village who knew about all the natural remedies. And now we trust that someone else will look at us, they'll say, oh, you've got this, and then here's the magic pill. And if there isn't a magic pill, then you're very much an inconvenience or you're permanently ill. And to allow nature to heal you or to allow your body to heal itself takes a lot of self-responsibility and self-discipline. And part of that...
It's time as well.
It's time.
It overnight. Yeah.
We don't allow for convalescence. You're either ill or you're better. And if you're looking well but not working, then you're lazy and, you know, it's not right. But also, if you accept that your body can heal itself and you don't need other people to heal you, you might need teachers, you know, because we don't know all this natural stuff. But then it raises the question of, well, why have I not been told this? It is very upsetting because you start to think, well, either people are lying or, you know, why are we not told about the power of minerals or the power of nutrition? And it challenges everything you've been taught and everything that you're meant to trust. And I don't think that doctors are malicious people trying to kill you with drugs or anything like that. Far from it. But I think it's the way they're taught is that science has an answer, that if you have a condition, there is a magic bullet, a magic pill that will fix it without you having to change any of your lifestyle that contributed to you getting ill in the first place.
We're talking about holistic, aren't we? That's what as you started the conversation, you know, if you've got something wrong with your head and your toe, there's nobody to go to. But if you've got something just on your head, oh, yes, there's plenty of people to go to. And it is that sense of course, we're holistic beings.
Yeah, but we're not just holistic in our own body. We're holistic as being part of nature and the environment we live in.
Absolutely.
And just now, when I became aware that I was part of nature, the teasels moved in because they said, oh, hey, she's ready for us now. She's not just going to dig us all up and throw us away. And just a few weeks ago, I was in Chile and then I went to visit beekeepers on Rapa Nui or Easter Island. And I was speaking with a beekeeper there who is original Rapa Nui. So they're sort of a Polynesian race. So even though the country's owned by Chile, it's very much a Polynesian island. And it was amazing talking to her because Rapa Nui's had a pretty horrific past, and not just where we think they all cut down the trees to move the heads around. It's actually in recent history, they've been abused by slave traders and people have come in and brutalized the country, you know. So the Rapa Nui people in living memory were herded into one village whilst a company, interestingly called the Rapa Nui Exploitation Company, which was Scottish sheep farmers, were allowed by the Chilean government to put sheep on the island. And they demolished all these ancient platforms that had the heads on with the stones to make stone walls to keep the sheep in. But what they actually did, the sheep had the whole island, and the people were kept in one little village. And so they had to be self-sufficient. And because it's such a remote island, the people had to have their own medicine from their garden and had to grow their own food. And so this lady, Diane, who was talking to me, who's a beekeeper, her grandfather was a beekeeper and her grandmother used to heal them with herbs from the garden. And then, of course, once the exploitation company were moved out and the country became more integrated with Chile, they had more Western medicine. And so a lot of that knowledge was forgotten. Well, when she had children, she started to think, do you know, I want my children to have the same knowledge and awareness of herbs as my grandmother had. So she and they were all given land. You know, if you're original Rapa Nui as part of the restoration, they were given a plot. But it's a volcanic island which has been brutalized by wars and sheep. So she had this plot of land and thought, gosh, nothing's going to grow here. The soil's rubbish. But she had that desire, that real inclination that her children needed to be fed and healed from this bit of land. So she was going to do whatever she could. So she just sowed seeds. She, you know, she just did whatever she could. She just put so much love into this bit of soil. And then what she found was weeds or plants appeared. And when she started to look through her grandmother's book or talk to her grandmother, she found that these were the medicines that her children needed. Wow. So, and this was lovely. This is only a few weeks ago, meeting a complete stranger who was happy to share with me that experience. You know, we just connected on that sort of spiritual level of bees and nature. And that was just so wonderful to know that wherever we are on the planet, nature is here. We are part of nature and we've just got to remember it. We've just got to be part of it.
It just gives me, listening to your story just gives me hope for the future, actually. I mean, we're going through particularly unpleasant upheaval at the moment, but actually with nature itself doing its thing, irrespective of climate change or whatever's happening to the planet, I just believe that nature will find its way and give us what we need all the time. It's just, we're all going through a big shift. Paula, it has been the most wonderful conversation. I could talk to you all day. Thank you so much. I just find that absolutely fascinating. So just tell people where they can find you.
Okay. So I have my own podcast, which is Creating a Buzz About Health, and my name, Paula Carnell. And I've got a website, paulacarnell.com. I'm most active either on LinkedIn or Instagram. And my main work is speaking about bees and health, but I work as a bee consultant. So if landowners want to have bees sustainably, or if they want to work with bees in a healing way, then I help them set that up. So that's what I do.
Paula, I absolutely love the work you're doing. You're just one of the world's angels, as far as I'm concerned. And so are all your wonderful bees, because gosh, we need them.
Oh, we do. Well, they're here to tell us. They're here to help us do this big shift.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I believe. I think they're really an incredibly important part of the whole shift that's going on. All the insects are. And it's time that we really respected them.
Absolutely.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. That was the wonderful and inspiring Paula Carnell. As she said, you can find out all the information about her work with bees, where she's speaking next, and also listen to her podcast, Creating a Buzz About Health, through her website, paulacarnell.com. To make New Year's Day 2024 even more special, my guest is 89-year-old neuropsychiatrist Dr. Peter Fenwick, talking about his own dying process. He is such an inspiration for us all, and Peter and I both look forward to seeing you then.